Today, the world is demanding more of products and packaging, especially when it comes to sustainability. In the next few episodes of Beyond the Shelf, we'll be exploring questions like, how is your company tackling regulations like extended producer responsibility? How can you meet consumer demands while keeping up with the latest trends? And how can you prepare your data and reporting to comply? We'll be exploring these questions and more with industry experts who are working every day to improve the world we live in, the products we consume, and the packaging we need to recycle. Hello, and welcome to Beyond the Shelf, the product and packaging podcast, where we interview the people behind the amazing products we use every day. I'm Laura Foti, and today I'm thrilled to be speaking with Dan Felton from the American Institute for Packaging and the Environment, also known as AmeriPen. Dan serves as AmeriPen's executive director, where he develops and champions positions for the U.S. packaging industry on issues related to packaging and the environment, using sound science and a philosophy of material inclusiveness. A well-known leader in the U.S. government affairs arena for more than 20 years, Dan has represented multinational corporations, various coalitions, and trade associations representing several Fortune 500 companies. He has a very impressive background, and we're lucky to have him here today. He is particularly passionate about environmental sustainability and packaging issues, and has advocated extensively in those areas at the local, state, and federal levels in the United States. Dan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Laura. Very happy to be here.
Well, we're excited for you to join. There's been a lot going on in the packaging industry, and would love for you to give a brief overview of AmeriPen and its mission within the industry for those who may not be as familiar.
Yes, happy to do that. Thank you. So we are a 14-year-old trade association based in the U.S. We were founded to sort of fill a void on policy and advocacy for the packaging industry writ large. And when I say that, Laura, by the membership of our association, it includes anywhere from packaging material suppliers to packaging manufacturers, converters, brand owners who use the packaging. We have recyclers within our membership, retailers as well. And we represent all materials. We used to say we're material agnostic, but that sounded a bit like we didn't care. We do care. So we say we're material inclusive. So glass, plastics, aluminum, steel, paper, combinations thereof. And unique to AmeriPen also, we have a whole host of trade associations, material, product, and industry specific trades that help inform the advocacy and policy work we do.
Obviously, a lot's changed in the past year, 5 years, 10 years in the industry. What are the main regulatory challenges that, you know, packaging is facing today?
Well, I think without stating the obvious or stating the obvious is extended producer responsibility, which is not a new concept for the managing of products at their end of their life. But we're talking about packaging product stewardship, which is new to the U.S. 3 years ago, the first couple laws were enacted, and now we are in the process of implementing around the country 5 laws. And we anticipate significant additional attention at the legislative level in other states, maybe even at some point at the federal level around the issue. So that's the biggest one we're facing, but not the only one.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's certainly other regulations specific to certain industries. We've had modernization of Cosmetics Regulation Act, which has packaging implications, and many others. You made a great point in that EPR is not new. You know, many of us are familiar with it for batteries and paint, disposing of those things a certain way, but now it is coming to packaging. You know, why is it coming to packaging now?
Yeah, I think a few different reasons. And if there was a discussion about the time AmeriPen was actually found 14 years ago, where there was an interest in seeing packaging EPR come to the U.S., it has existed in Europe since the early 1990s, began in Germany in 1991. It's been in Canada for 20 years, but just didn't quite gain the traction until more recently. And a few different reasons, in my view, because of COVID, for one thing. We had a whole lot more packaging out on in the consumer marketplace that consumers weren't used to seeing. So that was a driver on it. We've also had an increase in packaging policy in the U.S. around specific materials, bans, if you will. So policymakers have been talking more about it, and that has increased the attention to it. And generally, not only unique to the U.S., but around the world, is just this misperception, I like to say, as packaging being viewed as waste, right? And therefore, if it's waste, we need to do something with it. We don't disagree at Ameripen. We need to do something with packaging at its end of life, keep it out of landfills, off roadways, out of waterways. And that has been a driver as well in trying to solve for how to do that in the U.S. with a potentially somewhat outdated recycling system, I'll say.
Yeah, I mean, you make a great point. You know, the infrastructure hasn't necessarily kept up. And so I think, you know, people are looking at this, what are other angles we can, you know, address this at? And EPR is certainly one of them. I think the other thing, you made a great point about Europe, right? And that EPR has been around in Europe for much longer than the United States. But what we're seeing too is that the fines and the concept of taxes in Europe is starting to get, you know, have a much larger presence than it did before. Do you think that's another reason people are taking it a little bit more seriously this time, is there's that financial component?
I definitely think there's the financial component is a motivator, right? I also think that just generally speaking, the trend is that we see things gain traction in Europe, gain traction in Canada, and then eventually the U.S. catches up, right? Because we are in a global market, right? And as things, policymakers start to look at seeing what's happening around the world, and clearly, in particular, this focus on plastics, so many different conversations going on about it, and the economics around that, right? Tax a product? Do you have funding like under EPR come in through producers to help evolve the system? So definitely we're seeing that impact that in those discussions over in Europe have an influence here in the U.S.
Absolutely. And, you know, we may be one country, but we have many different states. Obviously, our country is known for the federal and state level. Do you think the state level complexity is going to make this challenging for companies?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you know, we have in the U.S. Federal oversight on solid waste management, generally speaking, authority, you know, to handle that is handed over to the state and local level. And because of that, I mean, you know, I hear numbers thrown around 9,000 to 18,000 recycling systems in the U.S. I mean, I can speak living in the Washington, D.C. area, seeing the changes from one county to a next or a city to a next. So that definitely creates a challenge when states are able to do their own thing, you know, in terms of recycling and putting regulations in place around packaging and how that starts to quickly. And we're seeing that extended producer responsibility, a great example where this patchwork developed, right? And is something that is needs to be solved for in the long run. We'll just have to sort of see how it shakes out.
Yeah. I know you've talked about the importance of having a seat at the table for these discussions. Can you talk about your membership base and why it's important for people to really, you know, packaging folks who maybe never thought of themselves as interested in policy, why it's important for us all to come together and have this discussion?
Yeah, I think it's for a couple of different reasons, Laura. One is that policymakers are not subject matter experts on most things that come that are brought to them, whether they be from a industry perspective or environmental or consumer, their constituents perspective. So, you know, Ameripen as a trade association can be one of those representatives, but it's really when you get down into the nitty gritty, again, I keep coming back to extended producer responsibility as what we have seen in deep discussions, both on the legislative side and the regulatory side over the last several years, is we need those people at the table to be help everyone understand what the complexities are, what the challenges are. If you're developing, for instance, a statewide recycling list, which is what we're seeing come out of EPR, is what's on that list, what's not on that list, what types of packaging materials are being manufactured and put out on the market, and how might changes be influenced at some point. That has to come from those subject matter experts, whether it be a brand owner or a packaging manufacturer. Another great example is the waste industry. And I like to now more say the recycling industry. The influence and the knowledge and expertise they have for the significant investments they've already made throughout the U.S. on how to recycle more. But then as they're a key stakeholder in EPR, is we have to have them at the table as well, because what ultimately might be paid for by producers, brand owners in the producer responsibility, it's going to have a very clear nexus to those, including down at the end to the recyclers handling those materials.
Absolutely. I mean, it's so important we think about this, you know, not just from an end of life, but beginning of life, you know, what type of materials. And I'm always reminded that packaging also has the word engineering after it, right? And like you mentioned, it's so, you know, we can't expect policymakers to know about, you know, the material science that relates to packaging or all these other components. I'm reminded of the congressional hearings a few years ago with, I think, Facebook, where it was just so clear some of our representatives just didn't understand how social media worked, yeah. Right? And that's something that I think we all take for granted. So we certainly can't expect them to be experts on packaging when people go and study this for 4 years and then go out and participate in this ever-evolving industry. Can you talk a little bit about who is a member of AmeriPen and maybe who should consider, you know, what types of organizations should consider joining?
Yes, sure. Of course, I mentioned we have that makeup across the value chain of the different segments of the packaging industry. So it's, you know, the recyclers, retailers, brand owners, packaging manufacturers, converters, material suppliers. But then within that, I always like to sort of break it down a little further. We're a policy advocacy organization. So by default, we are going to have a lot of government affairs, government relations, public policy people within our membership. So from all the different company members we have and trade association associate members, maybe 50% of the membership is made up of those types of professionals from the member companies. And then the other half is made up of sort of a breakdown. I split it a little bit between packaging designers and engineers, who are an important part of the conversation and the work we do. We've already alluded to that. And then sustainability professionals has become a key component of the makeup of our membership, even more so in the last 3 or 4 years, I would say, because of the interest in sustainable packaging and being sustainable industry and companies and what that means. So that's really all the different types of people that come to the table within AmeriPen to help us help with our conversations, to help inform policymakers. So anybody, you know, we will have a member company, you know, may have 10 or 12 people participating in our membership from different silos, if you will, of those companies. I also recognize, as we know, even with big companies, sometimes somebody's wearing multiple hats, right? They might be the sustainability person and the public policy person, or they might be a packaging designer, engineer who's also doing procurement or something like that.
Absolutely. It's funny you say that. I was talking to one of my good friends who's, you know, been in the industry for more than a decade, works at a major brand. And he said to me, Laura, like, we're looking to hire a packaging regulatory person.
Yeah.
And we don't know if that person should sit in legal. We don't know if that person should sit in packaging. So there's all these hybrid roles that are really emerging because of these broader industry trends. How can packaging professionals stay on top? Because these are skills they're not teaching, you know, in undergrad necessarily, right? So how can packaging professionals really, you know, keep pace with these regulatory changes?
We'll be right back. Imagine a world without waste. Imagine if you could make products and packaging right every time. It's possible with the help of SpecRite, the first cloud-based platform for specification data management. You can track and report on material usage year over year, run LCAs with the click of a button, and comply with new packaging regulations like EPR and the UK plastics tax. Go to specrite.com/sustainability to learn more. Now back to the show.
Yeah, I think there's a few different recommendations I would make. One is, you know, a little self-serving here, but be a member of a trade association, right, that's tracking these things. That may be AmeriPen, it may be a material-specific trade association. We, as an example, have significantly expanded our regulatory affairs component so that we can provide that type of information to those people who are either directly assigned that role within a company, or to your point, emerging because of emerging regulations that companies are hiring gearing up or hiring vendors, right? And you have some other organizations. I think of one as IOPP, which is the professional organization, the Professional Trade Association for Packaging Professionals, right? That is another group where they are helping their members understand of who they can network with, because I think networking is equally important. We can provide a lot of information, but you also want to be able to have platforms to be able to dialogue with your peers who are dealing with these same issues. And that's one thing I love to see is this recognition that, hey, we're brands, we're competing with each other, or manufacturers competing with each other, but we're all in this together, and that exchange of information that helps lift them all up at the same time is really nice to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we see that here at SpecRite in that, you know, the packaging industry is realizing we have to share data with one another. You know, if I'm the person who makes the packaging, I have to share the recyclability information or the percent virgin material with my brand owner so that they can report on this. And that simply wasn't needed 10 years ago. Yeah. And it required, you know, 10 years ago, if someone asked for the specification, you know, someone wouldn't want to send it to you necessarily, you know, and now this world has changed, and we all need to share not only knowledge with one another, but data and information. So I think that's a great point. The other one I'll make is the ecosystem approach that you mentioned is so critical, because, you know, we've been tracking sustainability for a while now, and there's no one person with the answer. I really wish there was.
Yeah.
You know, people ask me all the time, well, who's the one person we can go to? And I'm like, they don't exist. The challenge is so, the scope is so large, the challenge is so great that you just have to get involved. And to your point, industry associations, trade associations, you have to get out there and talk to your competitors, talk to your suppliers. There's really no shortcut when it comes to sustainability. But, you know, I am hopeful. Do you think, you know, you've been around this industry for a while. Do you think moments like this actually unleash future innovation? Because there's kind of this hard challenge. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's where innovation finds its footing, right? Is when you're faced with a problem that has been solved maybe one way, or there's a new way to solve for it, or you're challenged with a new requirement and how to solve for that requirement. And we're seeing it already. I mean, I'm seeing it. You come back to this discussion about how these companies are staffing up internally or externally. And I'm hearing a lot of discussion about that. And then I'm hearing the discussion about the data. Everybody needs that data. And if you find that innovation that comes through something like that, that is, we're definitely seeing that so much opportunity. I mean, another example I'll give you is as the recycling industries trying to respond to the new packaging materials that are out on the market, right? It's dramatically changed versus 20 years ago. And the innovation that's coming from that, if you think of robotics and AI and all these neat things, just the recovery industry is doing, which is what they've responded to a challenge, right? And the challenge is we need to improve innovate the recycling systems that were developed decades ago. And how do we do that? And you're seeing that as another example of where the innovation is remarkable, right? To be able to respond to what's out in the marketplace.
Yeah. You mentioned data. That's something I hear all the time. What are you hearing from your members about the challenges they're having around that?
I'm hearing a lot, believe me. I think one of the first issues is, what data do we need? And, you know, for instance, in extended producer responsibility, you can start to talk at a high level. Well, I know I'm selling this much material or into this given state. Maybe we know, maybe we don't know. But there's a lot of challenges there. But I think first and foremost, it's just understanding as these laws are passed and then the rules are made is what's covered, what's not covered. So that's a bit of a waiting game. It's difficult for companies to know everything they need to know until they've got the full program laid out in front of them. You can start to make guesses on it, but then they need to know fees, right? And what are the fees going to be charged on a particular type of material, probably by weight, and so that I can start to understand the materials I'm using as a brand owner or packaging manufacturer. And then as you look at the adjustments to those fees called eco-modulation, they may go up, it may go down, and then you can start to have that awareness of the data points that you can look at specifically and say, okay, now I know what's covered. Now I know what the fees are going to be. And eventually now I'm going to know if I want to make some adjustments to my packaging formats or materials so that I can, quite frankly, pay less, right? Which everybody wants to do that, right? And so I think that's really, there's some things that are not answered there yet, but we're going to get there.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're only going to get there quickly if we have the information to begin with. We just see so many people struggling with spreadsheets and emails. Mm-hmm. What's interesting too is I never thought I would live the day to see people like Ernst & Young and KPMG asking for this kind of data too. So it's, you know, I think this stuff will only be further audited as these fines become more rolled out. It's so interesting to see finance having more of a role in packaging. It's really interesting how within an organization, you know, this muscle will develop, if you will. I think there's still so many unknowns to your point.
Yeah. And to your point too, not only on audits and accreditations and things, but even venture capitalists, right, are paying more attention to this, obviously looking for opportunities, right, for business. So it's been really interesting over the last few years.
What do you see as some future trends in packaging regarding, you know, regulatory and sustainability efforts? Where do you think it goes from here?
Well, I think highlighted a little bit, and I know you mentioned it in the data aggregation and collection, is, you know, this is about more than extended producer responsibility. Obviously, we have recycled content mandates coming. There have been a handful of them over the last few years enacted in different states, mostly really almost exclusively separate from extended producer responsibility, but that's not done yet. That's going to be an ongoing conversation, whether it's standalone legislation and regulation focused on recycled content mandates, or if it's somehow built into the extended producer responsibility requirements. Another one is simply the requirements around recyclability, compostability, reusability in or outside of extended producer responsibility. But then how you label and make claims for that, that's just starting. I mean, we've got a critical law in place in California that's not quite up and running yet, but that's going to be a place we are going to continue to see conversation around that. The one last one I would put is toxics, chemicals, additives, those types of things in packaging. That's a sort of a renewed conversation. Years ago, it was around BPA, right? And then it turned into more recently a conversation around PFAS in packaging, not just food packaging, but that's where the conversation really got a foothold. But we're seeing it expand beyond that already to other materials, other additives, other chemicals. And I think we're just going to continue to see that coming up more and more in public policy as well.
That's a great point, Dan. You know, everyone's going to have to know more about their packaging than they ever did for a variety of reasons.
Yeah.
And you can't respond to these regulations if you don't know, you know, Matthew says you can't be sustainable if you don't know what you have. And it's not just sustainable, it's compliant as well. And so obviously I agree with what you said earlier that this, you know, it may be a challenge for the industry, but it does present a lot of opportunities. And the good news is, you know, it sounds like they do want voices at the table of people who are in the industry so that we can all shape this going forward. Any advice you would give packaging professionals as they navigate the next few years?
Yeah, you sort of went to one. I think we previously have talked about this, but that concept of what is sustainable, what does sustainability mean? And it comes back to that advice is you got to be at the table. You got to be at the table talking about this internally, and most companies are now. If they're not talking about how to be sustainable and what sustainable packaging and best practices are, they're probably behind the ball at this point. But I like to say, if you're having your internal table discussions, but if you're not at the table through your trade associations or through, you know, public policy engagement, policymakers are making those decisions for you in terms of sustainability. So again, I'm a little beating the drum over and over here, but be at the table in any way you can find to be at the table, you know, because if you're not making those sustainability decisions, there are policymakers who are making them for you. And you might not like some of them at the end of the day, to be quite frank. So I think it's thinking about that. And I think it's just paying attention to trends that we're seeing. And you know, it's always good if you're seeing something happen over in Europe or in Canada that maybe isn't happening here yet. Probably stay tuned because it's probably coming, you know, but keep innovating. You know, that's the other thing I think is it's so important for the industry to be able to talk to policymakers and others and tell them what all the great things are. I mean, and I see it over and over again, is how many great, I sit in rooms with professionals in the industry and hear all the wonderful, neat things they're working on. And it's incumbent upon groups like Ameripen to help bring that voice forward to others, right? Including policymakers, but just keep talking about all the great things that everyone that you're doing.
I appreciate it, Dan. I know when people hear the word regulation, they get scared, but there's a lot of resources out there. Ameripen is one of them where you can get yourself educated, learn. There's tons of resources. We've really enjoyed engaging with Ameripen. I've learned a lot already. And to your point, it's only going to continue to evolve. And we're glad that we have folks like you who are tracking this and staying up to date on it.
Well, happy to do it. And we're keeping me gainfully employed in our industry. So that's what we're here for. So
I think you guys are going to be really busy over the next few years. We appreciate you spending time with us today, Dan, and sharing all of your expertise and the great mission of Ameripen. We're going to close out with my favorite segment, which is some rapid fire questions. What's your favorite product right now?
Oh, my goodness. My favorite product. I'm probably going to call it a category of products, but I like these meal kits. So I'm not going to name a specific company, but I just think it's, I enjoy that right now because I'm not much of a cook and it's giving me an opportunity to learn how to cook a little more.
Oh, I love that. I'm a big meal kit person too, especially when I'm busy during the week. What packaging trend are you most excited about?
I'm really interested in accessible packaging. And by that, I mean how to have packaging options available for people who maybe have some impairment of some type of physical or mental impairment. And I just see some really cool things happening in that space. And it's just a great example of innovation.
Oh, Dan, I love that. My dad is disabled, and it's true. Like opening a box for someone who has abilities is like, it's easy, right? But not so much for people who have a disability. That's fantastic. Now we'll go to the last one, which is kill, keep, change. We're going to give you three random products. What would you kill or discontinue, as said nicely? What would you keep as is and what would you change? So we're going to give you a surfboard, a stapler, and a Pop-Tart. What would you kill? What would you keep? What would you change?
Surfboard, Pop-Tart, and what was the third?
A stapler.
I'd kill the stapler, I'd keep the Pop-Tart, and it would change the surfboard.
I love it. Listen, Pop-Tarts are an amazing innovation, so I agree with you there. Well, Dan, thanks so much for joining us. How can people follow you and stay connected to Ameripen?
Yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn. Just search Dan Felton with Ameripen. But more importantly, if you go to www.ameripen.org, whole host of information there, resources. You don't have to pay for everything as a member. That we have free resources too. So that's the best way to learn more about us.
Awesome. Thanks, Dan. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please rate and review us. It helps other folks find the show. Dan, thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Laura. Appreciate it.
Beyond the Shelf is presented by SpecRight, the first cloud-based platform for specification management. Say goodbye to spreadsheets, share drives, and legacy systems, and digitize your specs in a secure single source of truth. With SpecRight, you can easily share and collaborate on specs with other departments and across your entire supply chain network. Taking a spec-first approach enables you to accelerate product and packaging development, go to bid faster, report on sustainability, and ultimately spend less time chasing data and more time making amazing things. To learn more, visit specright.com. That's SPECRIGHT.com.